ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around talking about he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk?
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Everybody, welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 97 of the report. Yeah, man, and this is also the final episode of the year 2015. Man, I'm gonna take a couple weeks off, spend time with some family, enjoy these holidays, man, get my bearings about me, just kind of wind down for the end of the year, man. I'm physically and mentally exhausted at the end of this year, man. So I'm definitely taking a much needed break. And this will be the final episode of 2015. So I do sincerely hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you guys take this message into next year and build upon it and everything else, man. Whatever it is about the Span Report that you like, you know, just take that with you into the next year, man. Real talk, and we'll be back at it again next year, right? I also have a poll set up on thespanreport.com for you guys so that you could tell me what you guys would like to see more of come 2016 for the Span Report, man. And I got like five options there for you, whether or not you want to see more art or disagreements with the homie Mr. Gates, whether or not you want to see my wife on the show, whether or not you want to see more music, whatever it is that you want to see more of on thespanreport.com, go and vote in that poll. Let me know what it is that you as a listener want more of from the Span Report and the Span Report podcast and on thespanreport.com, right? Yeah, man. This episode is called the Message to the Ashy Nigga, right? And this is like a culmination of a whole lot of things that I've just kind of been observing, and like just the attitude that a lot of, unfortunately, black males tend to possess when it comes to black women. I will be sort of addressing tonight on this episode of the show. So this is the Message to the Ashy Nigga episode of the show. But before we get into all of that, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show, I gotta let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline. The hotline to the Span Report is area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those messages on the show, and of course I'll respond in kind. You can also email the show. The email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course, I will read those messages here on the show and reply to those messages on the show as well. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. That's SPANN. Both of those platforms, Twitter and Instagram. Chop it up with me throughout the week. Your asshat of the week submissions. Send me those ass hat of the week submissions starting next year, man. Get the ball rolling really fresh, man. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of people doing a lot of stupid shit. Send me those people you want me to talk shit about at asshat@thespanreport.com. Also, man, help your man out by doing some really nice shit and doing something that's free, man, right? And doing something that's free. Give your man an iTunes and or Stitcher Radio review, man, preferably 5 stars. 5-star reviews will be read, and I will thank you here live on the show, man, of course. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com, www.thespanreport.com. Yeah, man, check out all of the videos associated with the podcast. Check out the live shows or the rebroadcast of those live shows. Check those out at thespanreport.com. Every podcast that I've been a guest appearance, I made a guest appearance on, you see the friends of the Span Report, man. All of the people who are also doing podcasts that I fuck with, go check them out. And just go to thespanreport.com, and it's your one-stop shop for everything Span Report related. And yeah, man, go ahead and do that there, man. Speaking of the Span Report website, man, I had to do some damn redesigning to that, like, really, like, quick. Because, for whatever reason, man, like, right after I did the the last episode of The Art of Disagreement with the homie Mr. Gates, man, I was having some troubles with the website to where the theme that I was using, for whatever reason, was just causing my site to function abnormally, to where you couldn't access the site. Some of the podcast, after I published it, the podcast wasn't publishing to iTunes and Stitcher and everything. And it finally made its way to iTunes and Stitcher and however else you get your podcast. But it was because I had to go ahead and get rid of that theme and do something different with the website, man. And it's working now, but that was $100 that I just lost for that theme, because the website costs money, man. So, you know, I can't get my money back on that, which is what really pissed me off at the end of the day. But, you know, it is what it is at this point. I can't really cry over spilled milk. But, yeah, that's why it took a little time for The Art of Disagreement, that last episode, to show up, because I was having troubles with the site. And we got it together. And the site looks pretty good, I think. The site looks clean, I think. So, yeah, man, kudos to everybody who sent me and Gates questions for that episode. That was a 2-hour, 43-minute long episode, man. We went back and forth on a lot of different things, man. A really heated debate about Chirac, really heated debate about Black Lives Matter. And, you know, it's one of those things where some people got upset. I got a voicemail that I'm going to play on this show later on in the show, where a listener was pretty upset with some of the things that Gates were saying and whatnot. And we'll get into some of that a little bit later on, man. But yeah, man, heated discussion. So definitely go and check that out if you haven't. Go check out The Art of Disagreement, Volume 5, Instigation, where the listeners sent us topics to debate about. So yeah, that was a very, very interesting episode, to say the least, man. Real talk. But yeah, this week, what we're gonna talk about, man, I got a few things, man. And this is, I guess you can always say that everything that I'm gonna talk about today kind of follows a theme. And the theme is about the respect or lack thereof for Black women in America, especially coming from Black men. Right. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Let's see. I know we got some Bill Cosby to talk about. I got Bill Cosby to talk about. Daniel Holdsclaw, the officer, the former Oklahoma police officer who was accused of raping 13 Black women, was convicted last week. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. I didn't get a chance to speak on it last week because of the Art of Disagreement, the discussions that we were having. Also, there was Serena Williams. Serena Williams won Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year, and folks lost their shit and made it plain, man, made it plain that that they didn't necessarily respect her, not only as a person, as a human being, but they didn't respect the accomplishments of everything that woman has done over her career and over the course of the last year. So we're going to definitely talk about that. And I got a video of some guy from Chicago. He's from my hometown. And he is probably one of the impetuses for the reason why we're having this message to the ashy nigga now. Right? Because he represents a lot of the ashy nigga logic that, you know, unfortunately, there's so many brothers that are using to denigrate our own women, the Black woman. So I'm definitely kind of go in on that a little bit later. But first things first, man, we're going to talk about Bill Cosby, right? So as we all know, Bill Cosby has been has seen his, I guess you could say, we've seen Bill Cosby's star kind of lose a lot of his shine over the course of the last year, right? You know, with the multiple allegations of women coming forward to say that Bill Cosby drugged them, Bill Cosby sexually assaulted them. Bill Cosby pretty much made them incapacitated while he took advantage of them in an unconscious state. And Bill Cosby recently, after all of these allegations and after the 40 plus women have come forward to say that he is the monster, so to speak, his lawyers have come out and they've sued 7 of the women who have accused Bill Cosby of sexual misconduct with them or sexual assault. So Bill Cosby's lawyer, Monique Presley, went on the News One Now show with Roland Martin. And she did an interview with Roland. And I'm going to play a bit of that interview here in just a moment so we can discuss a little bit further. Here we go.
Joining us right now is Bill Cosby's attorney, Monique Presley. Monique, welcome back to News One Now TV One. We've seen this for months. Why did Bill Cosby decide to file this suit now?
Well, this was actually our time to file an answer in civil litigation when all motions to dismiss have either been granted or denied and you've gone through the initial part of the process. Then you get on a scheduling calendar and there's time for you to file an answer. When the answer is due, it's also time to file counterclaims if you so desire. And that's what we did yesterday, just on the regular deadline. It wasn't that we chose this point in time for any other reason.
So in terms of him going after these women saying that they are lying. This also now opens up further depositions as well. The attorneys for the women, they say, oh, we can't wait for our day in court. But for him to say that they are targeting him, preventing him and hurting his name, how did he arrive at that conclusion?
Well, it doesn't actually open him up to further depositions because these are seven women who chose to come into the civil litigation process and file suit against Mr. Cosby. What they did, in essence, was create a defamation claim. They got out there. They made false accusations. When his lawyers tried to deny those accusations, they sued for the denial as if he didn't have a right to defend himself.
And that's how made false accusations. What are you claiming to be false?
Meaning they claimed that they were drugged. They claimed that he drugged them either with or without their knowledge, or they suspected that they were drugged, that they were sexually assaulted, that they were raped. There was any number of claims, and those claims were categorically not true. So when Mr. Cosby's lawyers came forward in an attempt to deny the claims regarding these women, they got with some lawyers who know how to work their way into a courtroom. All it takes is $75 to file a lawsuit, and they did so. But the defamation suits on their part are very weak. There are lawyers across the country who are laughing at how they could actually think that they will pass muster past the halfway point. But because they are in court and because Mr. Cosby now has to hire lawyers of his own and defend himself, he's doing so by actually filing a proper suit against them for defaming his character, for assassinating his reputation, for doing so intentionally with knowledge, knowing that what they were going to do was going to cost him. And so we've brought suit, and now they will have to answer for the things that they've said.
So Bill Cosby is saying that for all these women here, for all of them, he did not drug them. He did not sexually assault them. He said for each one of these particular women.
For each one of those seven women. There are women in there who do not claim that the assault was actually a sexual assault in terms of an intimate touching with fornication, but there are different varying claims among the group. Whatever it is, their claim is, that claim in terms of criminal wrongdoing on the part of Mr. Cosby is false. And it's not just that it's false, it's that it was done intentionally for the purpose of ruining his reputation and extracting financial gain. People don't come into a courtroom just because they want to have something to say. They were doing that on every media station that would allow them to come in and talk. They sue in court because they're looking to get cash, and who they're looking to get it from is my client, and now he's doing something about it.
This is what Joseph Camerata says, the attorney representing seven women. Quote, this was expected. It's a page out of a defense lawyer's playbook. It's curious to me how there can be scores of other ladies who have come out, and yet Mr. Cosby has singled out seven of them to bring a claim against. Why limit it with this particular suit to these seven?
Well, there are seven women in this suit, and we sued seven. We're not limited at all. I would expect that if people stay tuned, they will see Mr. Cosby's attorneys moving forward offensively and defensively on all fronts.
So you're saying that with the number of other accusers as well, there will be more lawsuits against those women?
Any woman who's out there making false accusations against Mr. Cosby should expect that the attorneys will respond.
Also, Gloria Allred said, quote, Bill Cosby appears to be going to war against women who have sued him in Massachusetts and who allege that he has victimized them. Such a tactic will not deter courageous women from fighting the battle against him. With her, that's what she told USA Today. With her saying that it was a war against women, I mean, clearly, you have her making this particular claim, and folks are saying that here's Bill Cosby victimizing these women again.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the war wasn't waged by Mr. Cosby. Someone else started a war against him, against his reputation, against his legacy, a legacy that doesn't just belong to him, but I would argue to the African-American community and to the world. So if someone starts a war and is waging it against you, it's reasonable to expect that there will be a response. And people who were doing this to him should expect response.
Clearly, when you look at Bill Cosby being considered one of the leading voices in the country, his reputation has taken a hit. Do you believe, though, this further hurts his name by going after these women?
Oh, no, absolutely not, because he's maintained all along that he denied the allegations. And it's important to point out that Mr. Cosby has neither been charged nor convicted in a court of law, not civilly, not criminally. So this is just a next step in the process of doing what any litigant has a right to do when they're being sued, when they're being attacked, both publicly in the court of public opinion, whatever that is, that's a figment, but also in the court of law. So our first step in terms of an affirmative action, legal action for Mr. Cosby was taking it against those who are suing him. And it's, as Mr. Camerota said, proper.
Okay. Malik, personally, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Folks, if you look at what is happening.
All right. Now, a lot of things said in that interview, right? A lot of things said. You know, one of the things that I thought was a little interesting, and as I was taking a few notes as I was listening to Monique Presley speak on this case, is that, she went out of her way to say that, you know, that these women, these seven women who have accused Bill Cosby of sexual misconduct or sexual assault, that they were seeking money, right? That they sued Bill Cosby because they were seeking cash, right? And one of the things that kind of always, it's one of the criticisms of, sexual assault victims or rape victims or whatever, Or even when you deal with someone, say, like an R. Kelly, because we're going to talk about R. Kelly's ashy ass too, right? Later on in the show. But like one of the things that always kind of comes up is like, well, these women didn't go to civil. I mean, these women didn't pursue criminal charges. These women are out to get paid, right? And another thing that always kind of comes up is, why did these women wait so long and everything else? And, you know, I'm going to kind of reach into that too when we talk about Daniel Holdsclaw. Is the onus becomes what the onus lays at the woman's feet to say that, to prove what happened, right? Or she becomes the person on trial, right? So she was already victimized by this person taking something from her that didn't belong to him, right? But now that she's coming forward to say something happened to her, all of a sudden it becomes, we have to delve into the credibility of this woman. We have to kind of get into whatever this woman may have been into sideways, whether she was kind of an unscrupulous person, whether or not she was, we'll start just really trying to drive into the credibility of these women and whatnot. And to a large degree, I understand it. I definitely understand it, right? But it's interesting that she would talk about that these people were looking for money. Now, we do know that there's a statute of limitations when it comes to rape, right? Which I honestly think is a little asinine, you know, that we would have statute of limitations that we have on rape, where we don't have statute of limitations on murder cases or anything else where someone has had their life taken away from them. And you can argue that somebody who has been raped will never necessarily be the same person again after that incident has happened to them, right? So these women at this particular juncture really don't have any criminal recourse. Right. They can go and say that Bill Cosby raped them, that Bill Cosby had he sexually assaulted them or whatever else. But they don't have any criminal recourse when it comes to having Bill Cosby charged for what it was that they're accusing him of doing. Right. They just don't have that recourse. And at this particular point, one of the only recourses that they do have is to sue him and get punitive damages for what it was that he done to him, right? In much the same way that, say, for instance, the Nicole Brown Simpson's family sued O.J. Simpson for wrongful death in the death of their daughter, and the Ron Goldman's family also sued O.J. Simpson for wrongful death, even though O.J. Simpson was found not guilty in the deaths of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, those families were still given a civil judgment because they believed that he was responsible for their deaths, right? So in order for them to receive any semblance of justice at this particular juncture, a civil case would be the way for them to go, right? Now, again, we go back into the whole thing where people are asking, why does it take them so long to come out? Why don't they just shout it to the rooftops and everything else? And a lot of folks will say that, you know, if it were me, I would say this or I would do that and everything else. And they haven't found themselves in that position to even find out whether or not that would be something that they really would do, right? It's real. It's a whole lot easier for us to say what we would and would not do in a situation that we haven't experienced, right? So there's that. And I thought that was a little interesting that she would say that they were looking for cash. Of course, we know at this particular point, a lot of these women probably are looking for some sort of compensation for what happened to them simply because they have no criminal recourse, right? Another thing, too, is that it was very interesting that Monique Pressley went and talked about Bill Cosby's legacy. And she said that his legacy doesn't necessarily belong to just him, right? That, you know, his legacy belongs to us as African-Americans, you know, with the Cosby Show and Fat Albert and all of these other things that Bill Cosby, you know, brought to us in pop culture. And this is one of those things where we start seeing the blurring of the lines when it comes to his personal life and his professional life and how people can't separate the two. Right. So a lot of the defense of Bill Cosby, and I've said this many times, a lot of the defense of Bill Cosby is because people are attached to the characters that Bill Cosby has brought them, whether that be Fat Albert, whether that be Heathcliff Huxtable and the Huxtable family and everything else. People have an attachment to that. So it was very interesting for her to say, hey, this legacy doesn't belong to just Bill Cosby. This belongs to you, too. Right. So it's kind of a ploy to kind of, you know, get us to think about this in terms of black and white, as in terms of on racial solidarity, right? You know, we can't allow this to happen to Bill Cosby because, you know, most of the accusers of Bill Cosby are white women, right? So we can't allow these white women to come in and take this legacy and take this great man away from us. We can't allow them to do that. We can't allow them to tarnish his legacy in that way. And this not only belongs to Bill Cosby, but this belongs to you too, right? And it's very coy in how she did it, you know, and I get in this, and it kind of goes back into the whole thing of, well, you know, it's like what happened with OJ, right? You think about what happened with OJ Simpson, and OJ Simpson kind of led a life that didn't really necessarily have a whole lot of black people around in it, right? He had a white wife. He had a really successful football career. He was a really successful endorser. He surrounded himself around a lot of white folks and everything else. But the minute that he got in trouble, black people was where he was at. And he was trying to find himself back into his blackness, right? You think about R. Kelly, right? R. Kelly, and I'm going to talk a bit about this later, but R. Kelly goes on to talk about how we need to support each other and everything else, man, because all these other people are supporting their artists, man. Like Adele sold 2 point some odd million copies of her album 25, and, you know, our real R&B and black R&B, we're not seeing these numbers because, you know, we don't support each other and everything else. And it goes back into, we're supposed to forget that your ass pissed on and had sex with and married underage young black girls, victimized young black girls, but because you are in need of something for yourself, now you're going to trumpet the fact that we need to support you because you're black, right? So the whole idea, it's a little subtle, but if you're paying attention, you'll see that, right? The fact that she would try to use that is a little thing too. But not only that, we have to separate this idea that because Bill Cosby gave us Heathcliff Huxtable and Fat Albert and A Different World and every character that's associated with that, we have to separate that from the personal things that are going on in Bill Cosby's life and these personal interactions that he's had with these women, where you've got more than 40 women saying that you did something to them that you didn't have a right to do. Right. And we've got to take an honest look at that You know, and it's funny too, man. People keep talking about like they've been trying to take Bill Cosby down and doing this and they're doing that because Bill Cosby is too powerful. Bill Cosby's this and Bill Cosby's that. It's like, well, damn, if we're talking about power, if we're talking about money, if we're talking about access, if we're talking about accessibility, if we're talking about all this all these things, why is this the only dude it's happening to? How is Bill Cosby the only motherfucker in pop culture right now with 40 women coming forward saying he did this to me? Why isn't this happening to Michael Jordan? Why isn't this happening to Wesley Snipes or Spike Lee or whatever else? Why isn't this thing happening to them? How is it that he finds himself in a position to where 40 plus women can come forward and say, this man took something from me personally and I need compensation or I need some form of justice for what happened to me at the hands of this man? Right? So we get to a point, man, when this is ashy nigga logic when we start talking about this vast conspiracy about Bill Cosby buying NBC and, you know, doing all of these things. And this is the way to take him down. It's like at this particular point in time, Bill Cosby wasn't the most visible. Bill Cosby wasn't the most sought after. Bill Cosby wasn't, breaking box office records at this particular juncture of his life. He's just not doing all of these things. So for him to have this vast conspiracy just pop up all of a sudden because of his Netflix special, his TV show. He had a TV show after the Cosby show. It was called Cosby. It was on CBS. The shit didn't last that long. People weren't looking for Bill Cosby like that. They just weren't. So yeah, man, it's funny to me. I wouldn't even necessarily say it's funny. I think it's a bit, it's odd. I'll just say that. It's odd that Bill Cosby will just now come out and sue 7 out of the 40 plus women that are accusing him of sexual misconduct or sexual assault or whatever it is, wherever the details of what they're accusing him of is, that it's odd that out of 40 plus women, he's only sued 7 at this particular juncture in time. I know his lawyer said that they may sue some more, but I thought that was a little interesting, man. But fuck Bill Cosby. Yeah, I'm gonna just say that. Fuck Bill Cosby. Right? And let's move on. Let's move on. I got some more stuff to talk about. R. Kelly, man. Of course, you guys know I'm not the biggest R. Kelly fan. And it's funny because I used to be a really big R. Kelly fan. Now, I can't listen to him. I just can't, right? And I know some people still do. Some people will still put their enjoyment of his music over the, they will put the enjoyment of his music above the victimization of the black, of the women that he assaulted, of the women that he took advantage of the girls that he took advantage of. They will put their enjoyment of that music above that. And we have to put it in stark terms like that and make it plain. Have to make it plain that, yeah, you support a pedophile by listening to and buying his music and going to his concerts. Just admit that you care more about listening to this shit as opposed to what happened to those young girls. Just admit it. That's all you got to do. Just admit it. And you know what? I would be cool with that. Like, okay, I get it. I understand that you put your enjoyment of that music, of that man, above what happened to those young girls. And if you just be honest with yourself and stop trying to talk about him being a musical genius and he has the best R&B and all this other shit, all these platitudes that you try to use to validate or justify why it is you do what you do when it comes to R. Kelly, go right on ahead. But at least be honest with yourself. Just be honest with yourself, right? So R. Kelly has a new project coming out, or is probably already out. It's called The Buffet. And R. Kelly went to his YouTube channel and he made a plea for the black community needing to support one another. Right. And it's funny because I made a comment on this video the first time that they posted this video. And it was a lot of comments, something similar to what I was talking about. And those comments went away. Like, he basically erased. Whoever's controlling that particular YouTube channel for R. Kelly, they erased that initial video, and then they put up another video where most of the comments now are all in support of R. Kelly, right? It's really interesting to, like, kind of watch play out. But here's R. Kelly kind of stumbling through asking for support for his new project, The Buffet. So check this out.
Yo, what's up, you guys? It's your boy, Kells, man. I just wanted to break some things down and talk to you guys just to clip some things up. I've been getting a lot of slack from, you know, people about, you know, my album or, you know, my career and things like that. I just want to keep it real. I've been doing music for 28 years, and it's a blessing to be, to have done the songs that I've done all throughout the years. And, you know, some of them were hits, some of them were okay, you know, but it was the best I had, and I'm still today giving my best and doing what I can do. But I can only do so much, meaning, you know, I bust my ass going around the city, the country, you know, doing shows and a lot of things, you know, to survive and still gotta pay the rent, whatever. But I want you guys to know, I do this for the love of it. I don't do this for money. This is something I love to do. I was born to do music, you know, but come on, at some point, you know, we gotta start supporting each other. Everybody support. Every other, you know, category of music supports each other. They do. They just do. We got to start supporting each other. You know, guys came to me about, you know, my company's not getting behind this album, The Buffet album. You know, I wish that the company would, you know, get behind my album more, my albums more. But at the same time, I'm really not concerned about the company because I want my people. I want my people to get behind me. It's not about just the company. It's just not about R. Kelly going into the studio and putting his all into it. It's a supportive thing as well. And I just want you guys to know, you know, you guys have to support your own. We have to support our own. You understand? Because if somebody see us not respecting each other, then why do we expect them? How do we expect them to respect us? They're not going to respect us. Okay, the truth of the matter is that the album is coming out, Buffet is coming out, and I know I gave it my all. I believed in the project, as I do all my projects. I know when something is good, whether I did it or not. You know, I hear other people's album out there say, man, that's a great album, I love it. You know, but I also believe in my project, you know, The Buffet. This is not about selling no Buffet. This is about just keeping it 100. I don't care what we do, whether it's sports, whether it's selling music, whether it's having a clothesline, whether it's having cologne, perfume, whatever it is, we have got to get out there and we got to support each other. You know, it's not just about me, it's about anybody that comes out. We have to, and I know y'all know what I'm talking about, we have to support each other. If we don't support each other, how do we expect anybody else to support us? Real talk. We have got to support each other, man. Quit playing.
All right. Check this out. He pretty much goes on like this for like 8 minutes. So we're not going to play the entire video, but I have made that video available, excuse me, on thespanreport.com. So you guys can go out and check it out for yourself. Watch the whole entire 8 minutes and 47 seconds of this nigga talk about how much we need to support each other and everything else. And, you know, annotations coming up about no matter how you feel about R. Kelly, man, his messages are 100 and all this other bullshit, right? So let's just get into the meat of the matter with this nigga, right? The reason that you aren't necessarily seeing the support that you are normally used to seeing from your company or from your fans or the fans that you used to have is because people really have just stopped fucking with you. Just bottom line, man. Bottom line. And it's not so much about whether or not R&B music is getting support or whatnot. I mean, I've pretty much found ways to replace R. Kelly in my R&B playlist, right? I mean, there are artists that I listen to that pretty much put out some really good music, man. I know a lot of people like hate Joe because he puts out some simtastic shit sometimes, but I listen to Joe, man. I listen to The Internet, man. I listen to I still listen to like Boyz II Men. Boyz II Men is putting out some really grown up shit lately, man. Like, there's so much stuff in my Google Play playlist or my Google Play Music playlist or whatever that don't include R. Kelly, really good music, really good R&B. And I said I was going to make like a playlist that was available to the public so that they can go check that out for themselves. And like, you could even go listen to my homies over at the Where's My 40 Acres podcast, man. They are really good about putting people up on good music, good R&B, good hip hop, underground artists. The Weeknd, like, I remember hearing The Weeknd through Where's My 40 Acres before The Weeknd was the dude that he is now, and everybody's buying his albums and people talking shit about his hair and everything, man. But there are ways to support good R&B that don't include supporting ashy motherfuckers like R. Kelly, right? And, you know, I know a lot of folks are just like, nigga, Spanda made this personal when it comes to R. Kelly. And, of course, it's personal for me. I have a daughter, man. And I know a lot of you guys have daughters, too. And I know a lot of you motherfuckers wouldn't trust R. Kelly at home with your daughters, right? R. Kelly has had so many different things happen to him. I remember he had like a management company. Like, they said, fuck it. They couldn't fuck with him no more because this nigga fucked their daughter. You know, you think about the fact that he married a 15-year-old Aaliyah. You think about the fact that he had so many young girls from Kenwood High School in Chicago that he took advantage of. The fact that he put the young lady who was caught in the video, the one that he pissed on, that he put her father as one of the executive producers of one of his albums so that he would continue to get paid. Like, and you have to, at the same time, take issue with these kids' parents too, right? Like, that you would allow your daughter to be pimped out in that way, that you would allow your daughter to be taken advantage of in that way. And I'm just not one of those dudes. I cannot operate in that way. Now, I know a lot of folks will be like, well, damn, Span, you know, if we're going to apply that kind of thing, man, there's a whole lot of famous people who have done some really fucked up shit. And if you had to cut yourself off from everybody who did some fucked up shit, you wouldn't have nothing to watch. You wouldn't have nothing to listen to and all of these other things. And I just tell you like this. Sometimes people have their lines. And this is my line right here. R. Kelly is the motherfucker that I ain't fucking with no more. And so this whole thing of saying, hey, we got to support one another, you know, black people, man, you know, this is our music, because that was one of the annotations too, the R&B music, this is our music and everything. Listen, I will support good R&B, just not this nigga. Just not. I just can't do it, right? And at the same time, I'm talking about the victimization of young black girls, right? The victimization of young black girls. And I'm going to play a clip a little later that kind of speaks to black girls, black women, and everything else. But, excuse me, that is something that I think kind of goes under the radar. When like a young white girl goes missing or something like that, or is taken advantage of, or is assaulted in some sort of way, man, that shit makes the news, like heavy news. I remember, say for instance, like with Natalie Holloway, the girl went missing in Barbados or Bermuda or something like that, and Nancy Grace was all on top of that, man. 24/7 news coverage of that, CNN all over the top of that. You got little kids come up missing in Chicago, two little young black girls. I hate that I can't remember their names right now, but I remember this shit happened in like 97 98. Two young girls came missing. It was a Chicago story. That shit didn't go national. It was a Chicago thing, right? So, you know, the value of young black girls or young black women or black women, period, isn't as high to a large degree of people. And when we allow motherfuckers like R. Kelly to prey on young black girls and get away with it and go to his concerts and pay him for his music and pay him for, you know, And lay homage to this nigga. I remember it was talking about 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, he was on the Soul Train Music Awards and Erykah Badu, God bless her soul. But goddamn, talking about this nigga, he did more for black people than anybody? Come on, man. He ain't did more for black people within his own genre. Right? But, you know, it is what it is. I know, like, for me, R. Kelly is, like, just kind of a thing. Like, and my family, like, you know, and he's from Chicago, right? You know, there's that thing too. Like, my people from Chicago, he's a Chicago guy. Like, hey, man, we got to support our own. I can't support us despite that. Like, this, it's like I'm supposed to look over your fuck shit just because you black, right? I'm just supposed to look over it. Like, okay, well, he black just like me, so I'm supposed to just say fuck it, and he's black, so I'm supposed to just let that shit roll. Nah, man. Nah, I'm not going to do that. And, yeah, sometimes I call folks out for doing that, for allowing themselves to be compromised in that way. I know, you know, it's a bit judgmental. I get it. I know that. I know that's one of my flaws. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I'm just trying to get people to think about what it is they're really doing, right? At least how I see it, right? So you may not get it the same way that I get it. You may not even agree with how I get it, right? But this is me being true to you, being true to myself, and letting you guys know that, hey, yeah, you can support real music. You can support real R&B without supporting a pedophile motherfucker like R. Kelly. That's just what it is. That is what it is, right? So yeah, man, that's what it is. Another thing, man, another thing that kind of came up was Serena Williams. Serena Williams was, she won the Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year Award. And for whatever reason, people lost their shit. namely, a lot of white folks, right? People lost their shit about Serena Williams winning the Sports Person of the Year Award this year. And, you know, they tried to make it out about her being sexualized on the Sports Illustrated cover, which was some bullshit because, you know, you think about the fact that Serena Williams has caught a lot of flack or has been made out to be as if she wasn't an attractive woman. So it was real interesting to see a lot of white folks talk about her being sexualized and everything else when they try to talk about her being manly and not necessarily. You think about a lot of the her contemporaries in the game of tennis saying that they don't want a body like hers. And yet, you know, and you think about the fact that Serena Williams is the most dominant tennis player we've had in just about a generation. And yet you have so many players in that particular sport who make way more money than she does endorsement wise because of the obvious of how they look. Right. So, you know, they may not necessarily be as good as Serena Williams on the tennis court, but when it comes to making money outside of it for the endorsement deals and everything else, they pretty much got, you know, they pretty much got it made. And so it's a repudiation pretty much of how Serena Williams looks on a concerted effort. It's very concerted on to pretty much like try to minimize Serena Williams' aesthetic look. Right. And, you know, it was another thing, too, that happened after she's won this Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year Award. I think it was the L.A. Times had a poll to say who should have won the Sports Person of the Year Award. Should it have been Serena Williams or American Pharoah, a fucking horse? Right. We're voting for Sports Person of the Year. And folks were mad that the horse didn't get it. So now we're comparing black women to horses. Right? Right. So, yeah, man. Like, I understand that Sports Illustrated, they had a poll where folks were voting for Sports Person of the Year and people voted for the horse for whatever reason. And they were upset at the fact that Serena Williams was given the award, or that Sports Illustrated, their editors, had decided that Serena Williams had the most dominant year. She was the Sports Person of the Year. And so I'm going to just read off some of these tweets that folks went to Twitter to talk about with Serena Williams. And I'm just going to put their names out here. I don't give a fuck about their damn anonymity because they said this shit publicly. They said some really dumb shit publicly. So I'm going to just say their names. Brian Zips said he was very disappointed to see Sports Illustrated's editor ignore the fans' vote and choose Serena over American Pharoah. Article coming, right? So I guess he writes somewhere. He's going to write an article about it. But I wonder what that poll did. That poll say that your vote would be the end result of what the Sports Person of the Year Award would be, or who would get it? Because a lot of them seem to be upset with the fact that Serena Williams didn't win that poll, but she won the Sports Person of the Year. I really would like to know whether or not Sports Illustrated said, hey, whoever wins this poll wins the Sports Person of the Year, right? Pat 40, who was at Yahoo Sports, I believe, wrote, I think he was responding to Marcellus Wiley, said they should have given it to the damn horse, right? Justin Zayat said, total BS. Why have a poll if you totally ignore it? Serena failed at winning the Grand Slam. AP once in a lifetime horse. Okay, AP. American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. We haven't seen a horse win the Triple Crown, I believe, since Secretariat. I get that. American Pharoah is not a fucking person. He's just not a person. right? And again, I would like to see whether or not that poll said, hey, this determines the sports person of the year award, right? Julie Witt said, I have the utmost respect for Serena Williams, but as far as the year 2015 is concerned, AP was by far and away the best, right? Now, we have to take into account, like, Serena Williams almost completed the Grand Slam. Serena Williams is also the only tennis player to have a slam named after her, like the Serena Slam, because she won four Grand Slam titles, not in a particular calendar year, but she won four in a row. They call that shit the Serena Slam. No other player has done that, right? And you think about the sicknesses that Serena Williams was dealing with when it came to her knees, her body betraying her, being sick with the flu during one tournament, man, coming back after dealing with that flu and beating one of her opponents. I think it was in the semifinal. I forget which particular tournament it was. It may have been the French Open. But, yeah, man, like the lack of respect for Serena Williams and her accomplishments is kind of mind-blowing. Owen Jake wrote in to say, #AmericanPharaoh, this seems like pandering. It was the year of the women in sports, so they had to find a good woman. They had to find a woman good enough to try to give it to. Well, even if that were so, you put Serena Williams's accomplishments up next to just about anybody in the last sports in sports this year. Serena Williams is her resume stands up. Bottom line, her resume stands up. So, yeah, man, it's yet another example. Yet another example of the constant beating over the head of black women to tell them they're not good enough, they're not strong enough, they're not worthy, they're not any of these things. Like, we're comparing black women or a black woman to a horse for sports person of the year, right? It's crazy, man. It's crazy. And it's you know, it's oh my God, man. It's just dumb people all around, man. Americans are dumb. Right? Americans are dumb, right? Another thing happened. I'm moving kind of quick today, right? But another thing happened, man. Daniel Holdsclaw, right, was the Oklahoma police officer who had been victimizing black women. He had 13 victims. He was convicted in a Oklahoma City courtroom, found guilty of rape. And yeah, man, let's kind of listen in on this here.
Verdict, count one, sexual battery. We, the jury and panel, have sworn in the above entitled cause to upon our oaths find as follows. Defendant is guilty of the crime of rape in the first degree, and punishment is set at 30 years. Defendant is guilty of the crime of
4 counts of first degree rape.
And punishment is set at 5 years. Forcible oral sodomy, and punishment is set at 16 years. Defendant is guilty of the crime of rape in the first degree, and punishment is set at 30 years.
You're going to have to give me head or go your ass to jail. You never sucked a white dick before.
Count 30.
These are some of the quotes
battery
that he said to these
defendant
women.
Is guilty of the crime of sexual battery.
He's looking at 263 years in jail.
Verdict, so say you all.
Someone said, the victim was asked why she didn't report the rape, and she said, what kind of police do you call on the police? Right? And it goes into the whole thing of, why didn't you say something sooner? Who do you call? Right? Who's going to believe me that a rapist who's a police officer, who's going to believe me in that particular exchange? Or you can take it even further and we talk about Bill Cosby. Who's going to believe that Bill Cosby did something sideways to me? Even with R. Kelly, who's going to believe that R. Kelly needed to rape this little girl? He got women all over the place. Who's going to believe that R. Kelly would do such a thing? It's a pattern of how we talk about victims, how we talk about women, how our psyches are pretty much structured to think that these things with these particular people just aren't possible.
Thank you.
All right. Now, that was, I forget exactly who this video is from. I think it's American Justice or something. Yeah, you know, it was interesting, man. Like, Daniel Holzclaw, he was like boo-hooing when he got convicted, right? He was like all in his shit. Like, he was, I didn't do it, man. Just tears, man. You'd have thought like his mom died or somebody had killed his dog or something, like tears. And, you know, the national media didn't necessarily cover this trial. I think one of the only news channels that may have, and I wouldn't necessarily consider News One a news channel, but TV One with News One Now in the morning, they talked about it on the Roland Martin show. So kudos to them over there. They talked about it. And, you know, it was interesting. One of the things that I found interesting about the whole thing with Daniel Holzclaw and how we view, you know, victims and victimization or even the perpetrators, just in how we look at the perpetrator, so to speak. You know, it was interesting to me to see a lot of folks who were caping for Bill Cosby and talking about how these women were making these things up against him. And these women were, you know, why didn't these women come forward sooner? And why didn't these women do this and that when it came to Bill Cosby? And yet they were all about Daniel Holzclaw being convicted and facing 263 years, right? We still have this level of cognitive dissonance where we would just say, hey, I'm all about this dude being locked up, but don't fuck with Bill, though. Right. I thought that was interesting. It was quite a few people who were doing that, who were all about Daniel Holzclaw being locked up, but weren't necessarily all about having Bill Cosby being held accountable for the actions that he's being accused of also. Right. There's that. Another thing, too, was the fact that Daniel Holzclaw, one of the reasons why he was there was the pattern in which his victims or the profile in his victims, and that they were black women, some of them from lower income, lower socioeconomic standing, who had some sort of dealings with criminal justice or some sort of dealings with the system before when it comes to criminal justice. Right. And so basically he preyed upon them because, of course, he thought no one would believe them. Right. That was his thinking. That was his MO. Who's going to believe these women over me? Who's going to believe them? And it wasn't until he tripped up. I think he raped a 50-year-old grandmother who wasn't from the area, who reported what happened to her. And that's what got the ball rolling. And that's when all of his other victims started to reveal themselves to say, hey, this happened to me also. This is what he did to me. I was forced to perform oral sex on him to keep from going to jail. I was forced to do a lot of like, you have to follow the case. Right. But the way that in which his mind operated was nobody is going to believe this woman that I did this to her. In much the same way that we could say Bill Cosby, I'm going to do this and nobody's going to believe her because of who I am. Right. So it's good to see. I'll just say this. It is good to see finally, someone in law enforcement who was acting criminally, being held accountable and being made a display of, so to speak, when it comes to how they treat black people, black women, black, like the people in which they're charged to protect, to have someone be held accountable for their actions, and which is what the Black Lives Matter movement is about, right? Being held accountable, for the police to be held accountable for how they interact with citizens of color in the places in which they're supposed to serve and protect, right? So, yeah, man. Daniel Holzclaw got 263 years. I'm happy about it. A lot of folks are happy about it. It is one example of people standing up and speaking out and bringing attention to actually having some tangible results. Daniel Holzclaw getting 263 years for assaulting 13 black women. I know 8 of them, he received convictions of for 8 of the women. All of them women didn't get the justice that they deserve, but he's looking at 263 years behind bars, man. So kudos to those women for standing up and speaking out and, you know, being brave enough to stand up for yourself in the face of a bunch of ashy motherfuckers and a bunch of people who aren't from the culture, who would tell you that you aren't worthy of being protected and you aren't worthy of being held up. Right. So, yeah, man. Yeah. There's that. There is that. Now, there's another issue that I kind of want to speak to. And, again, like I said, this is the impetus. This video was the impetus pretty much for the naming of this episode, Message to the Ashy Nigga, right? Because, there are a lot of dudes, a lot of black men, who hold this view, right? And, unfortunately, there's a lot of black women too. There's a lot of people within our culture, period, that hold on to these views. And a lot of it is, it's a bit of shaming of people in poor positions, so to speak, especially black women in poor positions. So I'm going to play this video. I'm going to play this audio for you guys. You guys can listen. And then I'm going to kind of go in. So here we go.
Peace. It's the God.
God,
Minister Jep. You know? Motherfucker riding down 87 and shit. But yeah. Wanna talk to y'all, man, about a phone call I received from one of my homegirls. We was just chopping it up, man. You know? And you know, motherfuckers always talk about some Jap, you crazy, you be going in, this and this, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of people don't realize, a lot of people reach out to me, be women that really, really agree with this shit. And they just be sitting there looking at how stupid y'all sound, man. But we're going to address this single mother thing again, man. Like, she feels a way about that shit like a lot of other black women who went about life the right way feel fucked up about shit too. And my thing is this: I want to stop praising, rewarding, you know, saluting this single mother mentality shit, man. Black single mothers, everybody kiss their ass. Like, it kills me. You know, her biggest problem, what she was tripping on, was, you know, she don't got no kids. And anytime she wanted to go to college, she had to pay that shit out of pocket. She practically go into debt trying to go to school. And you hear black single mothers always talking about, I'm a single mother, I'll go to school, ooh, I'm making it on my own. This is, no, you're fucking not. Your ass is getting some type of government assistance, you know what I'm saying? They be having link card, so you don't pay for your own meals or your baby's meals. You know what I'm saying? Then you having Section 8. You don't even pay for the roof over your head. You know what I'm saying? The white man paid for your shit. You don't even have to pay to go to school. You can go to school for free. All because you laid up with some nigga and had his baby. Now you tell me that this system makes sense. You know what I'm saying? You got a black woman who is doing good, taking care of herself, working, trying to go to school, but she has to pay for it. She can't get financial aid because her parents made too much. She got to take out loans, go into wild debt. But the single mother can get financial aid, all types of public assistance. The government basically lightens the load on a motherfucking single mother. And y'all don't think that I should be saying some shit about this shit? Like, can't nobody say nothing about this shit? Like, there's no talent to having babies. There's no fucking, there's even no plan. These hoes just fucking, and then have babies. Get with one nigga, the relationship don't work. Get with another nigga, get more money from the government for the more fucking kids they have out of wedlock. Because the moment that they get a fucking husband, they know all that shit gonna get cut off. So, How am I supposed to uplift a black woman when she don't think she's doing shit wrong? No. I'm sorry. I'm not kissing y'all ass. All this single mother shit. I don't give a fuck who get offended. This shit is the motherfucking truth. You should have fucking got married and then had your kids. You fucking up the black community because you walk around here proud of your fuckery. Proud of your fuckery. You see what I'm saying? That's just like a nigga who go to the county, go to jail, and y'all throw him a party. Welcome home. Ooh, like this motherfucker accomplished something. Yeah, we glad to see you and all that shit. But nigga be running around here proud like they was in the joint and all this shit. Run around here proud. Fuckery. Proud of the fuckery. That's what's wrong with black women. Proud of all the fuck shit they do. They wear this shit like it's a badge of honor. You don't get props for being a single mother. You got bitches in high school having kids. I'm supposed to call them queens? I'm supposed to respect them? That's a respectable act? We supposed to baby them and not tell them the fucking truth? That you just set your fucking life back? And yes, I commend those who are single mothers who handle their business. You know, you got yourself in that situation, you take it on the chin, you handle it. Raise that motherfucker shorty. You know what I'm saying? But you supposed to learn from it. And you, the good black single mothers, should be just as passionate as me when I go in on single mothers, because they should be telling all the other sisters who don't got kids to don't go down this path. And y'all should not be doing it 2 to 3 times. Multiple niggas. And you getting all this money from the government, but you independent? Nah. The government should cut your ass off after your second kid. And I bet you motherfucker hoes close your legs then. You know what I'm saying? Bet you start getting on some birth control then. Bet you make a motherfucker marry you then. Because y'all need support. Y'all can't raise kids alone. That's why you get all these motherfucking programs. If y'all could do it by yourself, y'all stop going. If y'all was really, really single mothers, like y'all say y'all is, y'all wouldn't ask nobody for shit. But y'all full of shit. Y'all just want to be pampered and complimented for bullshit. That shit is gonna stop. Ain't nobody complimenting y'all for that shit.
All right. There's there's another 5 minutes to this video. And this video is available on thespanreport.com. So you guys can go and kind of check that out for yourself. But you know, I told you guys before that I was there was a clip that I wanted to play for you that kind of speaks to why I'm doing this particular episode of the Spare Report, message to the ashy nigga. And this comes from none other than Brother Malcolm. This was probably said like 1963, something like that. Well, Malcolm was speaking on not only the plight of the black woman, but he also talked about the police too. And it was kind of funny how it tied and related to the Black Lives Matter movement. I know my homie Gates keeps talking about, you know, he studies Malcolm and everything else. I wonder if my brother heard this, you know. But yeah, I'm going to just go ahead and play this real quick.
The most disrespected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And then the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. We will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men. until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in the direction of our women. We respect them, but we want them to respect us. We think that the law should respect the Negro community. The law should protect the Negro community. The law should approach the Negro community with intelligence if it expects the Negro community to react intelligently.
All right. Now, I played that because we have so many instances of black men getting their asses up on Facebook, getting their asses up on YouTube, getting their asses up on Twitter, publicly denigrating, downgrading, talking shit about their own women to everybody. As if our women aren't worthy of respect, aren't worthy of consideration, aren't worthy to be protected. Right? All day long, this kind of shit goes on. All day long. And this dude in this video, right? You know, one of the first things I wanted to know was, like, where is all this money that these people are on public aid are getting? Like, how much does this nigga think that public aid is paying out? I've got family members that are on public aid right now that are barely fucking making it. Barely fucking making it. How much money does this nigga think that public aid is paying out? At what point do you think that, I'll just put it like this. Have you even considered some of the circumstances that led these people to go on public assistance to begin with? How do you know that she, at what point she was not married to the father of her children? Right? How do you know that she hasn't gone on to try to elevate herself and go get some sort of college education or what have you? Right. And I know he kind of couched this into, well, I was talking to my homegirl and my homegirl was, you know, she's saying like, I'm doing it the right way. You know, I'm trying to go to school, man. And these girls out here, they're just getting pregnant and yada, yada, yada. And the government giving them all this money and I can't get no money to go to school. Now, if she's really about her shit, there's a lot of different ways to get money to go to school. If she's really good at school, if she's really scholarly, she can get scholarships that don't include the government giving her a goddamn thing. Right. But we're going to try to shame the young black mother, the black mother from where I come from. I'm just gonna give you all a little story, right? Tell y'all a little story. Now, my shit is anecdotal as fuck. I don't care. This is a spare report, right? I'm gonna give y'all a little anecdotal story about me and my life and how I came up, right? My mother was 19 when she had me, right? And I remember my grandmother tells me this story all the time about how my father came over to the house when they told her, when they went to tell my grandma and my grandfather about my mother being pregnant. And he came over to the house and he talked about how he was going to step up and do what he needed to do to take care of his son. Right. He was going to do all of these things. And, you know, I spoke about this previously on my show. I did a podcast early on, man, episode 9, Daddy Issues. I spoke about this. When my father passed away, I spoke about this, right? I did a video years ago. Me and my father got into a spat years ago before he passed away. I hadn't talked to him since I did that video where I pretty much called him out on his lack of being a father, right? I did that. I came up, me, my mother, and my brother. I was a welfare kid. I got reduced lunch, right? I was one of those kids who got the free lunch, and I was being teased by the kids who had parents who had more money than my mom had, and they were always asking me, hey, are you going to drink that juice? And if I told them that I was going to drink the juice, like, are you hungry, motherfucker? Like, hey, but you don't want asking me for the juice, though, right? Trying to shame me for that. I remember buying, being one of those kids who couldn't get Nikes, who couldn't get Reeboks, who couldn't get Fila's, who couldn't get K-Swiss, who couldn't get all of these British Nikes back in the day. I remember not being able to get that shit, having to take my ass up to Payless Shoe Store and go pick out some Pro Wings or some Coasters. Y'all remember those?
I remember being a kid with the government cheese in there. I remember being the kid eating Farina. I remember being that kid. I remember being the kid who would make mayonnaise sandwiches, who would make, I would just put butter on a piece of bread and just microwave the bread and let the butter melt in there. And that was my sandwich. I remember doing shit like that. And I also remember my mother struggling to find work. Right? To kind of supplement what little we were getting. It wasn't like we had a whole hell of a lot of motherfucking food in the goddamn refrigerator. It wasn't like we had this immaculate ass place that we were living in. We didn't. And I know a lot of single mothers. I know a lot of single or like kids who are the result of that. They didn't have those these benefits that all these motherfuckers seem to think that comes with having welfare. Like, they don't get it. I've been in a position, right? I'm a utility worker. I've been in a position where I've had to cut people's gas and lights off. And I've seen the conditions in which some of these people are living in. And I've seen where folks are living desperately. And to have me come up and say, I got to cut something off. And the desperation in their face to say, hey, man, I can't let you do that. My babies are in here. Get the fuck away from here. Right? I've seen that. I've seen people take advantage of the system, too. I've seen that also. I've told this story plenty of times. I don't know if you guys have heard it on this show, but I've told this story when I was also a shutoff man walking up on a house in the Boston Edison district in Detroit. And this dude having a goddamn bin sitting in the fucking driveway and having a diamond necklace dripping off of his neck and saying that he couldn't have his lights and gas cut off because public assistance was helping him pay it. But this isn't the motherfucker that these ashy niggas like this are talking about. This ain't the guy. We're not talking about him. No, we're not going to talk about him. That's too easy. Or better yet, that might come too close to fucking home. Let's talk about what these women ain't doing. Let's blame these women for why our young boys are in fucked up positions. Never at any point are we having these substantive discussions about, hey man, as a father, how do you feel about the fact that you left your baby mama and your son over there by themselves? You talking about what these people are benefiting from, all these extras that they're getting. Nigga, where? How? I know of people right now. I know some ashy, bummy motherfuckers right now that have kids who are living in fucked up positions, in fucked up conditions. I know a nigga right now, right? I'm gonna just put it out there. Fuck it. I know a nigga right now whose kids were living in a house that didn't have any fucking heat in it. And his baby mama called him to come over there and fix the furnace. Why? Because this nigga does heating and cooling. She called this nigga to come over there, fix the furnace. It's cold over here. We cold over here. We ain't got no heat. And this nigga told her what? Get your new nigga to do it. This nigga was willing to let his kids, his children, stay in an ice cold home because his feelings were hurt about the fact that his baby mama wasn't with him no more and had found somebody else. So he was willing to let his kids pay for the fact that his feelings were hurt. Right? We talk about child support system and all these other things, man. And I'm going to tell you, man, like just going off of my own personal experience, I know my mother didn't put my father on child support yet. We were still on welfare. I know my mother never spoke ill of my father. I had to find out by myself that my father really wasn't shit. And I know a lot of times folks sit up and talk about, your mother may have chose you. Your mother chose him. Yada, yada, yada. Your mother chose to lay up with this bum ass nigga and everything else. And yet I roll around with dudes, right? I listen to dudes sit up and talk shit about their baby mamas all the motherfucking time. I've seen one of my homies put up a picture of his baby mama talking about she's a cokehead. Right? Because he's mad at her. He would put that out that she's a cokehead. I've seen this happen. At what point do you look at yourself and say, well, if she's a hoe and everything else, what the fuck does that make me? Because, hey, I made babies with her. Those are my kids' mom. That's my kid's mom. I made babies with her. At what point are we going to talk about your decision to make babies with her? Just as much as it was her decision to lay with your ass, she has, right? And I know a lot of niggas who going to probably listen to this later. They going to say, hey, Span, man, like, you pandering, nigga. You know, like, you just trying to get some ass, man. You just trying to get pussy, yada, 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 man. You just trying to get these black women on your side and everything else. And you hear a lot of that, man. Like, a lot of niggas sit up and talk about how you trying to pander to black women and everything else. Like, no, nigga, I'm being true to me. I'm being true to myself. I'm being true to my people. How on earth can you sit up and say you are for the upliftment of black people when you sit up and denigrate black women, half of our fucking population? How can you sit up and say that you for our upliftment when you denigrating half of our fucking people? How can you do that? How can you be in your right consciousness to say that these women need to step aside and let me be the man I need to be? What kind of man are you that you need a woman to step aside for you to be who the fuck you supposed to be? How is your manhood tied to that? How are you threatened by your woman being successful? I've seen niggas get mad. Like, hey, man, she talk about it's a college education, man. Like I ain't good enough and all things. Like, dude, be proud of that. You know why a lot of these women have to say, I don't need you? It's because a lot of you motherfuckers sit up and talk about how fucked up they is, how all these women want is what's in my pocket and everything else. When a woman finally goes out there and does things on her own, provides for herself, be her own person, and then you get some ashy nigga running up on you talking about, hey man, how you doing? She's straight on you, dog. You ain't for her. She ain't for you. Move on. Find somebody else that's gonna be cool with you, because there's always somebody for somebody. Water seeks his own level. Right? Now, we going to go back into this whole thing of, you know, these women are getting all of these benefits, man. I've seen where a woman, single, three kids, may get $200, $300 in food stamps for her children. I've seen it go as little as $75 a month for one child. In a month. Now, that child has a father. What is that father's contribution? Sometimes the child support, father may only be paying, what, $75 a week? Your child is only worth $75 a week, nigga? Some of you niggas can kind of step up and pay up a little bit more than you do. Some of you can put a little bit more time in. I know I could, too. Right? But this constant drumbeat of the black woman being the fall, the black woman being responsible for what's going wrong in the black community is tired as shit. It's ashy nigga logic. It's some bullshit. It's some bullshit. Sure, I can point to instances where people are not acting in a civilized way. That's the easiest motherfucking thing in the world to go find examples of people acting really fucked up and say, hey, this is what represents them. This is why this is X, Y, and Z. Black women are the reason why black men don't know how to be fathers. I've heard that. I've seen niggas talk about that. Well, I'm going to tell you this, man. I made a conscious decision when I was young, man, that I don't want my kids to ever have to know that feeling of not knowing where the fuck the daddy was, not knowing why my daddy wasn't around, not knowing if my daddy cared for me or anything else, right? I made that decision for me when I was young. It ain't had shit to do with my mama. It had everything to do with the fact that my daddy wasn't shit. I didn't want to be him. I didn't want to be nothing like him. Had nothing to do with my mama. Right? So, I've seen people talk about black women being the reason that our kids are turning gay. Dr. Umar Johnson did a goddamn presentation about the rise of black homosexuality and all this other shit, which is why I think a lot of you niggas who listen to that kind of shit is kind of fucked up in the head, too. You know, there's a little Jews every now and again, but a lot of it is bullshit, and I'm just going to call it what the fuck it is. A lot of it is bullshit.
And a lot of it is rooted in making you feel good about yourself. Let's just call it what it is. But I've seen black women being denigrated and said that they are the reason why our kids are turning gay. No, your kids always been gay. It's just more acceptable for people to be who the fuck they are, regardless of what the fuck you think about it. Your kids ain't turning gay because they being raised by their mamas. It was gay people from the beginning of time. Nigga, are you stupid? Gay people always been here. This shit ain't just pop up. You got gay uncles. You got gay aunts. You know that auntie that show up to the family reunion with her roommate? They've been roommates for 30 fucking years, all your life. You know what's up. Don't start acting funny now. That ain't the fault of these single mothers. Don't try to say that as if it's a bad thing too, right? Try to make that a bad thing too. Don't say that. It don't make sense. It don't make sense. What if I told you that a lot of these niggas talk a lot of this shit because secretly, even though they say that they want to be, you know, they want the upliftment of black people, they want what's best for us as a people, as a culture and everything else. What if I told you that really the only thing these niggas really up for is the elevation of themselves? What if I told you that the reason that a lot of these motherfuckers envy the black or the white man is that they simply want his spot? And that if they could, they would take his spot and none of this other shit would change other than the fact of who's in charge. Right? They would still have income inequality. They would still denigrate homosexuals. They would still denigrate women. They would still go about the actions of exercising supremacy in some sort of way. A lot of these niggas who would purport themselves as being leaders, that's what they're about. They want to elevate themselves. They don't give a fuck about the people. They damn sure don't give a fuck about the women, because they think if the women are on equal plane with them, then it somehow usurps their authority, right? You cool. Just stay back there for a minute, baby. You all right. Just be back here. I don't need you over here. And you'll sit up and talk about, you know, guys sit up and talk about, well, you know, these boys, man, they being raised by these single mothers, man. They don't know how to be men and everything else, man. I've heard that. I've heard that a thousand times, man. I work hard every day. I work in a very manly job, man. I work in construction and shit. I help make sure people's houses don't blow the fuck up. I service appliances and whatnot. Really manly shit, you know. My mother had nothing to do with that. You know, it's sickening to constantly hear niggas talk about what black folks need to do. And the first thing they do is they point to the black woman and say, she's the problem. And I'm sick of you niggas representing for niggas like me, right? Like, I'm going to shout out my homie, Mr. Gates. I don't know when you talk about the Black Lives Matter movement. I'm tired of them representing me. Well, I'm going to tell you other niggas like this. Don't represent me like that, dog. Don't represent me like that. Because y'all sound stupid as fuck. Y'all making all of us look like goddamn fools. Nobody is taking us seriously because you don't take yourself seriously. You don't take your people seriously. If you feel like, hey, in order for me to get where I need to be, I need to denigrate half my motherfucking people in order for us to be where we at. In order for us to get rise up, we got to put the women in their place. They can't be at the table. They can't talk to us. We got to put them off to the side. They're only good for making us more babies, right? We got to get us some more sons. That's the only thing they're good for. Put them in the kitchen. Don't let them talk to your sons too much. That boy gonna turn gay. And I know a lot of times, man, we talk in these extremes. We talk a lot of these extremes. You know, I can talk to you about the fact that I know a dude who decided to become a certified child care provider in the state of Michigan and was getting paid by the state of Michigan to pretty much babysit his own kids. He was getting paid to watch his own kids because he didn't want to go get a job. So he'll sit at home with the kids and his baby mama, but the state is paying him to stay at home to watch his kids because he didn't want to go work. I can talk about the many instances of the people that I know who are young, 23, 27, 33, who are getting SSI disability benefits for some phantom condition that they came up with. Niggas will never work again. Ain't paid shit into Social Security. Right? We don't talk about these cats, though. We always want to talk about the mom who has the kids who she has to raise and everything else, as if she's being rewarded with being saddled with kids that some nigga gave her that he helped her create, and he's out doing whatever the fuck it is that he wants to do. We always talk about how the reason that these kids are so fucked up is because, you know, they're being raised by their mom. Totally leaving these fathers off of the hook. These dads, these sperm donors pretty much. Because that's pretty much the only thing they've contributed to the life of the children is the sperm. I know, I spoke about my father in these very same terms. So, I guess for me, as someone who comes from a single parent household, a single parent family, pretty much, where my mom raised me and my brother the best that she could with what she had at the time, what she had available to her at the time. I'm eternally grateful for that. And I know niggas will sit up and talk about, well, we not talking about your mama, Span. She did what she could have did. But at the same time, you're talking about somebody else's mama who may have been in the same motherfucking predicament. And she fits all of these criteria that you put on women being not shit. She fits all of these. She hits all the check boxes. My mother included would have hit all of you dusty niggas check boxes. And it resulted in me, right? And it also resulted in my brother, who's had some troubles with the law, who's locked up right now. My brother's been in prison for 10 years. Me and my brother are like night and day. Was that because it was because of my mother? Because my mother wasn't shit? Because the situations that my mother was in or the just the circumstances of how we came to be? How do you explain me and my brother being raised in the same home and I'm where I'm at and my brother's in prison for the last 10 years? It's all about the decisions that me and him have both made, and sometimes us becoming lucky or unlucky. But a message to you ashy niggas, especially when it comes to our women, shut the fuck up if you ain't got shit good to say. If you don't have anything constructive to add to this conversation, shut the fuck up. Stop getting paid off YouTube by talking shit about our women. Stop getting attention for your channel for talking shit about black women. Stop going to Twitter ranting about black women when you are ashy as fuck. You know, it's funny, like, you know, we talked about the slut walk and stuff like that, man. And you'll have niggas sit up and talk about, yeah, man, this chick on Instagram, yo. Yeah, man, she only got a million and a half followers because she on there twerking and shaking her ass and shit like that. You'd be like, oh, yeah, so you follow her too, don't you? Oh, well, yeah, I follow her and shit, you know, because, you know, that ass do look good. You know what I mean? Playing, you know, that shit do look good. But, yeah, man, she ain't good for the people. Like, nigga, shut your dumb ass up. It's sickening, man, to constantly hear niggas talk that dumb shit about our women and think that they're talking constructively. That's what they think they're doing. They're thinking they're talking constructively when really they're just tearing down the self-esteem. They're tearing down the very character of our women. And then on top of that, they're doing it for the world to see. And then you go back and you think about what Malcolm X said, that the black woman was the most vulnerable person in America, the most disrespected person in America, the most unprotected woman in America is the black woman. And that's because we got black motherfuckers on social media, on podcast, on TV, and whatever the fuck else, just doing their damnedest to make sure that they get their shine by talking shit about black women. And I'm sick of you niggas representing me. I'm sick of you niggas forcing yourselves upon me. This goes out to like the dumb niggas like Tommy Sotomayor and Tariq Nasheed and this ashy nigga in this video from Chicago. I'm sick of you niggas representing for me. So, yeah, man, I'm gonna get the fuck out of here. But I want to thank everybody who has supported the Spare Report podcast from its very inception, including my man, Mr. Gates, man. It will be no Spare Report podcast had it not been for him. As a matter of fact, before I do that, I just remembered that I do have a couple voicemails that I need to get to. And I will be with, it would be unfortunate for me to forget you people. So let me go ahead and pull up my Google voicemails real quick. Just a second, people. Let's see. We got a couple of them here. And this first one, let me go ahead and play it.
Hey, what's going on? It's the Span. It's your boy, Rude Boy M. Dope episode number 95. Made a lot of nice points. And my main point was regarding that person that was saying there's not any positive TV shows with black folks. Not to lie to you, man. What is it? Mary Jane on BET? Man, that show, man, is starting to have some pretty nice stuff on there. Be Mary Jane. Like, they talk about, you know, politics a little bit, about life, you know, about debt, you know, explaining how 80% of Americans in debt because they buy stuff they can't afford. Mm. You know, and now I'm watching this one episode, you know, they're talking about, you know, how we all get our media from TMZ and everything else. And most of the time, it's when it's something bad that happened. But, yeah, man, too bad it's on BET, you know. But I think the director, they do a pretty good job, man. Be Mary Jane is a pretty good show. If there's any other black shows out there, man, just plug them in. Not a now, man. Keep doing your thing, man. All right, man. Stay warm out there in Detroit. All right, peace.
All right, man. Thanks to Rude Boy M for that voicemail. And I think that was a response to, it was an email I got where a brother was talking about, you know, there being no really good black shows and whatnot. And again, that all goes into what your criteria is as far as a good black show is concerned. If you're tied up into the respectability politics of how you look and how white people are looking at us, man, you're going to always be fucked up in the head thinking like that. So, yeah, man, there's plenty of shows that feature black people, black characters in very pivotal positions. And you just got to look for them and you got to acknowledge them when you do see them. So, yeah, man, thanks Rude Boy and for calling in. Hope to hear from you again soon, brother, man. Real talk. Here's another voicemail.
Oh, Mr. Stan, sir, I am listening to your latest episode on Stitcher, and about a third of the way through, I can't stop saying, fuck that guy. First of all, I'm super white, very white woman in Alvin, Texas, and I am very much for the Black Lives Movement. I don't see how people aren't. Of course, I'm constantly arguing with my own family members and how fucking ignorant they are and how Black Lives Matter does not mean other lives don't matter. I'm sure it's much more frustrating to you than me to have a black guy on there, clearly intelligent, thoughtful guy, mostly seems nice enough. I respect him only because you respect him, and you're so respectful and nice during this debate. I don't know how you're keeping it together, but how is he so ignorant to these things? He's clearly also pretty sexist. I don't even know what to say. Fuck him. Fuck him. I'm sorry. Fuck him. He wants to live in an ignorant bubble. He wants to be some fucking Bill Cosby guy, I guess, and be like, black people need to take care of their own stuff. They are taking care of their own stuff. At least many, many are. But certain problems keep them from progressing. I always can relate it to being a woman. As a woman, yeah, we're handling our own shit, but things are keeping us down. So as any kind of minority, as a woman, as a gay person, I don't know how, if you're any group that has been on the outside, you are not for Black Lives Matter. I don't understand that. He's saying such ignorant things. He's clearly not researching anything. The fact that he's saying, oh, this protesting, that never gets us anywhere. Marching never gets us anywhere. What are you talking about? History says absolutely fucking differently. He's just wrong. He's just wrong. He's pissing me off a lot. Plus his low-key sexism. Maybe it gets worse as it goes on. I'm not even done listening to the episode, as I said. It probably does. I bet he delves into the sexism some more. Because I guess guys like that just can't help it. I don't know. Props to you for being so cool and respectful during this. That's why you have a podcast and I don't. I do fuck that guy. That's all I can say. Fuck that guy.
All right. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. I'm going to say this, right? Because I know a lot of people, when you know they listen to the Art of Disagreements and whatnot, and even if you listen to this particular episode of this podcast, man, you know, you're going to wonder how me and Gates are friends. And I'm going to tell you now, again, like I've said previously before I started the voicemails, the reason that there is a Span Report podcast is because of Gates, man. Gates has... pretty much he gave me the idea to do a podcast. When I first started doing my podcast, it sounded a lot like Gates's podcast because he was the first podcast that I listened to. He introduced me to a lot of the some of the podcasts that I was listening to earlier on. There was a time where some of my thoughts aligned with Gates, right? I've kind of grown in a different space, right? I've kind of grown in a different way where some of the things that me and Gates talk about, we don't necessarily agree on. I think one of the reasons why we do the Art of Disagreement is because we know that what folks tend to do is they'll get into these, we'll get into these cocoons and we pretty much just sit around and we talk about things with like-minded people who, you know, sometimes kind of agree with everything we're saying, right? You know, to a large degree, we get around people who, and we don't really want conflict and everything else. But sometimes what happens is you don't necessarily get another line of thinking. You don't necessarily get another way of looking at things. And even though me and Gates may disagree on 1,000 things, that is still my friend, right? And so we operate in that space. We operate in a way where, you know, I can still pick up the phone and call him and ask him, you know, what's going on with him, how are his kids doing and everything else. And he can do the same for me. And we come together on those Art of Disagreements because a lot of those Art of Disagreements are conversations we've already had on the phone, right? And we're basically going through it again for the listening audience to show that we can continue to coexist, not necessarily hate each other. I may hate some of the things that Gates says. I mean, if you watch the podcast, like as he's saying some of that stuff, I'm looking at him like, nigga, are you crazy? You know? And so... we just kind of found that way to kind of coexist in that way. And I credit that man for putting me in he gave me something that I love, man. And that's this show. He gave me that idea to do this. So, that's how we operate in that way. And I know a lot of folks, man, when it comes to Gates, I know a lot of folks don't like him. I know he's fell out with a few other podcasters that I consider friends also, you know, and you know, it's just one of those things, man, where I'm a loyal dude. And as much as me and Mr. Gates may disagree on some shit, that's still my friend. And I think that's the lesson that we really try to teach with the Art of Disagreement. I know you hate him right now. I know you hate him. I know he says some really fucked up shit. He says some shit that I consider fucked up, right? But that is my friend. And I think it's important that we do have discussions sometimes with an ulterior line of thinking and not necessarily fall into our own cocoons and our own thought bubbles and things like that. But I appreciate you calling and I hope to hear from you again soon, Sister Real Talk. Thank you so much. But yeah, that's it for the Span Report this year, man. Like I said, I want to thank everybody who supported the Span Report podcast from its inception to what it is now, man. Go to thespanreport.com and vote in the poll, man. I got this poll for the start of next year. It's going to be on this episode on thespanreport.com. Message to the Ashy Nigga and just tell me on the poll what you want to see more of on the Span Report starting 2016, man. What is it about the Span Report that you want to come from next year? So, yeah, man, thank you to Rod and Karen over at the Black Guy Who Tips. Thank you to Deidre, Brandon, Mike, and Twan over at the Where's My 40 Acres podcast. Shout out to my homie Be Honest and all of the guys over there at the No Nonsense Show. Shout out to Jamil Hill and Michael Smith over at the His and Hers podcast. Shout out to Lavinia and oh my God, I hate that I'm forgetting her name, but her cousin over at the I'm trying to shout everybody out right at the end of the year. Y'all know what I mean. Like the Black Astronauts, the Pisces Life, Whiskey Mine, Wine and Moonshine, the Onyx Truth, who I listen to. Everybody who's doing this black podcasting thing, thank you for doing what you do. Even if I don't necessarily agree with every fucking thing you say, thank you for doing what you do. But this message to the Ashy Nigga, I'm tired of you representing me. And I think our responsibility as black men is first and foremost to protect our women and our children. And so I can't sit idly by and allow black men to constantly denigrate and put down black women in public forums with no consequences. So thank you for checking out the Span Report. I'm signing off for 2015. I'll talk to you guys again on the other side of the calendar. And y'all be easy. So take it easy, fam. Peace.